The Athletic. Totally Football Show, European edition today. Spain, Barca go top four. Italy, Inter's lead slashed to 1 point. France, Messi scores a goal. All the unbelievable details of the European weekend, plus Samp's atomic ant, Dortmund's Groundhog Day, and Belgium too. Coming up in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And off we go with another European edition of the Totally Football Show. Listener, you know the drill, you know the lineup. Got that James Horncastle. Woo!
That's me.
Splash of Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
And a mighty helping of Alvaro Romeo. Hola.
Hola, James.
Got a lot to talk about, of course. You're right, listener. We have had a week off. We did miss PSG losing in the cup to Nice. And... ooh, Alvaro, Athletic Club de Bilbao beating Real Madrid in the Copa del Rey semi-finals. Woof, how sweet was that?
Very sweet, because we won it in the pretty much last minute, and in the last month we have beaten Barcelona, Atletico de Madrid and Real Madrid, so things are going pretty well, but I don't want to get too carried away because I've seen my team losing 7 cup finals in a row. Oh. I want to take it little by little this time.
Well, you got a semi-final coming up. Which day are you? Wednesday or Thursday?
We're playing on Thursday.
Thursday, right. Okay, and that's against Valencia in a two-legged semi-final. The other semi sees Rayo Vallecano taking on Real Betis. Crikey. All right. Super. Jules, any comment on PSG losing to Nice in the Coupe?
It was bad. It was really bad.
Really, on penalties? Really,
on penalties. The debate was a bit on the 18-year-old Xavi Simons who took the penalty.
Oh.
And why not a more senior player had stepped up, because he went in number 6 and Poch washed his hand completely, saying, well, I sorted out the top 5. After that, it was more down to the feeling of the players, which I thought was a bit easy. Xavi Simons, to be fair to him, has been taking penalties at under-19s all his life. Someone like Kimpembe could have stepped up, never taken a penalty either. So, I don't know, there's pros and cons, but it was a terrible display by PSG.
Imagine taking penalties at under-19 level all your life. So at age 2, he was stepping up, take penalties at under-19 level. That must have been really character-forming, I must say.
Towards 7-8, he improved, and it was much more clinical.
Oh, dearie me. All right, let's get some moments of the weekend then in association with Paddy Power. Jules.
Well, I have to start with PSG and the 5-1 win away at Lille on Sunday night against the champions, because that was probably the best performance we've seen since Pochettino arrived at the club, certainly in the league. It was good. Messi was really good. He scored, which now he has scored as many goals as Adil Rami in Ligue 1. But he was really good, and he played in the centre. He looks much better in that position in the centre. So it'd be interesting to see what Pochettino does next with Messi.
Crikey, a result so one-sided that even Messi scored, James.
Jules, you mentioned Adil Rami, which brings us back to the time he was dating Pamela Anderson. Do you ever think we'll see Disney Plus do Pam and Adil as well as Pam and Tommy?
Please.
Or you just don't think it'll have the same success?
I think this would be amazing. He's up for a new career after his career finishes, which will be soon, as an actor, he said. He did a couple of interviews this week or last week. Where he comes back, he said, basically, I was the fantasy of the whole country. Like the whole of France, all French men were envying me and wanted to be in my position, you know, going out with Pamela. Mm-hmm. So we know it didn't really finish well between the two of them. We know as well that they were not really talking to each other. But yeah, it was still a lot of fun.
Okay. Let's get some moments of the weekend, though. Alvaro.
Well, this time the moment of the week is something that doesn't look too funny. I mean, it was Simeone just lifting from the floor Daniel Vaz, so he could keep playing against Barcelona, and Daniel Vaz was visibly suffering from something. This week, or today or Monday, we learned that he had a sprained knee and he couldn't play. But Simeone lifted him from the floor without an iota of care, and probably the doctors were not advising to do that. But Daniel Vaz playing the last minutes of that game with a knee injury was a very bad image. And at the end of the game, Ferran Torres, Jordi Alba went to him because he was really suffering on the floor. And yeah, I think that this time Simeone didn't do a favor to himself. Sometimes he doesn't know how to adjust his passion, and this was one of those times.
Interesting though that game featured both a Daniel Vaz and a Daniel Vez. But we'll come on to that major tactical observation perhaps later on. James?
Well, I know Jules is very loyal to Ligue 1, but I think this weekend, of all weekends, he could have been forgiven for cheating on the French League to go with Serie A, and particularly the Derby della Madonnina.
I don't know
and
which
the
one
French
to pick.
Connection.
Let me think. I don't know which one to pick. There's so many.
But for Jules, I think this one, yeah, there's no doubt. It's Mike Maignan, French goalkeeper, making the saves. It's Giroud scoring the goals. It's Theo Hernandez provoking a tunnel fracas at the end, as they are known, as Milan came back from behind to beat Inter and throw the closest title race in Europe's top five leagues wide open all over again.
The only title race. The only title race. Excellent. All right, well, let's hear more about all of those stories and much more in this Totally Football show.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. If one leg of your 4+-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Attenzione, Giroud in area, si gira, sinistro, rete, ha raddoppiato il Milan, al 33esimo minuto, nel corso della ripresa, cambia ancora il parziale a San Siro, gol, capolavoro di Olivier Giroud.
Saturday night at San Siro, it was the Milan derby, and a Milan side that was battered, black and blue by Inter in the first half, coming from behind. In pretty improbable circumstances to blow the Serie A title race wide open. All right then, James. Gazzetta dello Sport Sunday morning said, Giroud, the derby belongs to you. What did you think?
Well, it did. I mean, it was a stunning turnaround in the space of 5 minutes from Milan. I think they were helped by Stefano Pioli's changes. I think he recognised that Frank Kessié playing as number 10 was not working, brought on Brahim Diaz. All of a sudden, Bennacer started to find Diaz in between the lines. And then Inzaghi helped as well with his own changes, which hurt Inter. And, you know, so as much as Inzaghi was saying afterwards that the result is a lie, we dominated for 70 minutes, they threw this game away. And I think, yeah, there is a trend with Inter where they've won one of six games against the teams that are in the title race and Champions League running as well, that they've lost their heads before in their first and only defeat of the season before Saturday night against Lazio when Federico Di Marco was on the ground. The referee played advantage. Inter took advantage but didn't score, and Lazio went up the other end and got a goal themselves and went on to win. And it's weird because, you know, as we've spoken before, James, on this show, Inter have, it feels like they've gone to another level this season in the standard of their play. They've obviously got into the round of 16 in the Champions League. They are still top of Serie A, but this record against the top sides and their kind of inability to hold their nerve in these games is a source of preoccupation going into what is a very tough series of games over the next month.
Well, it was a fabulous turnaround for Milan, in a literal sense, for Giroud's second goal, where he spun and shot past a flailing Handanovic. But a huge boost for Milan after a week which has seen some criticism of their lack of activity in the transfer window. They're now 1 point behind Inter, who have got a game in hand. But you mentioned Inter's record in the big games. Inter also only 1 point ahead of Napoli, and that's who they're facing next weekend. Yikes.
Yeah, they'll have Koulibaly back, fresh from winning the African Cup of Nations with Senegal. Koulibaly, who has been out, it feels like, for months from Napoli, either with injury or going away to Cameroon for the African Cup of Nations. And you know, whilst they've struggled a little bit without him, Juan Jesus has been playing in his place. They've gradually got more and more players back over the last month. And I think it's four straight wins now in the league. And it's been curious because no one's really been speaking about Napoli. You know, on the back of the transfer window, it was, wow, Juventus won the transfer window. Juventus are back. Inter had a good transfer window as well. They're top. And Milan, as you mentioned, got criticised and it felt like they were fading. And lost in all of this is Napoli because, you know, Napoli didn't do anything aside from sign Axel Tuanzebe in the transfer window to cover for Kostas Manolas, who left. They've had a few injuries, as we mentioned, and you know, they lost, they relinquished top spot really from November, but they're right in it. I think it'd be very interesting to see how Inter manage their energy, I suppose, over this cup quarterfinal that they've got against Roma in midweek, which is all of a sudden massive for Jose Mourinho, not only because it's against his former side, who beat him 3-0 earlier in the season, but because cups are the only way that Jose is going to make a success of this season at Roma. And then, yeah, they've got to go to Napoli. And Osimhen back on the score sheet in the win against Venezia. We need to talk more about Napoli. I think that's the conclusion, really.
All right, well, it's a huge game coming up at the weekend. Only 1 point separating the top three. I should mention that it was a bad weekend all round for the Inzaghis, because while Simone was losing at San Siro, Pippo Inzaghi, his big brother, got fired by his club Brescia, even though they're third in the table down in Serie B. This following a goalless draw with Cosenza. Who on earth is the crazy owner who would fire national treasure Pippo Inzaghi in such a manner?
Chilino, he's still there. He's still part of the Italian football landscape. Just as, you know, we lost Maurizio Zamperini last week, passed away, the former Palermo and Venezia manager allenatori. Used to go through, tens and tens of coaches over 3 decades at the helm of football clubs. Then Ferrero, who's, you know, sort of had to relinquish his position as owner of Sampdoria. But, you know, Cellino's still around and he might be in charge of a club that makes it back to Serie A next season, just without Super Pippo.
Yeah, Massimo Cellino there at Brescia, even if Inzaghi isn't anymore. All right. Well, the other big thing to talk about from Serie A, as you mentioned, Juventus with the signing of Dusan Vlahovic just at the end of the transfer window. He made his debut Sunday night in the clash with Verona. So did their other big January signing, Denis Zakaria, both on the score sheet. DV7, I'm surprised they're not calling him yet. But what a brilliant start for the Serb.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like the debut of a new Juventus, not just these two players, both of whom got on the score sheet. It's quite interesting. Allegri afterwards says, didn't have such a great game. You know, I mean, his control early on left a lot to be desired, lost the ball 3 times. But, I mean, he could have had a hat-trick. And I think what's exciting for Juventus fans is that, you know, as much as it was Vlahovic and Zakaria scoring, the guys assisting those goals was Morata, who's the man of the match. Fantastic performance from him. And Dybala as well. So, look, it wasn't a sparkling performance because I think, you know, Verona made it difficult, although they were quite toothless themselves. But certainly very encouraging for a Juventus side that, you know, really since November has, you know, locked the back door, doesn't concede any goals anymore. And this attacking anima is now being introduced into the team and now feels alive. So, even the guy that they signed for next season, Federico Gatti, the Frosinone centre-back, he scored as well. So all the Juventus signings scored this weekend. I mean, it's a great time to be an old lady.
Italian press calling Dusan Vlahovic the best striker not called Erling Haaland in Europe. What do you think, Jules, Alvaro?
Yeah, I agree. I think he's right up there. I think he needs the Champions League now, or at least play in Europe, to confront himself with the best defenders, which Haaland and Mbappe, whatever, the others of that generation have done already. And then we will have a better idea. But certainly in terms of goal scoring, in terms of the finishing, the ability and everything that he can do, he's such a complete striker. I think he's right up there for sure.
Mm, can't believe Ciro Immobile is not in this conversation, but yeah, Alvaro.
It's not the same age.
Maybe not for me. Maybe,
Ciro or Zero? Or where is...
But I think that he also oozes confidence at this stage. I mean, he's been scoring non-stop for a long time now, Dusan Blaovic, I say. And yeah, I think that Haaland, Blaovic, and, you know, maybe Harry Kane, whenever he's kind of fit, are the best strikers in Europe right now.
All right, well, Dusan Blaovic should be debuting in the Champions League against Villarreal in a week or two's time for Juventus. Speaking of whom, let's next up get the latest from La Liga.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Ferran Torres, todavía peligro para Dani Alves, la mete para Jordi Alba de volea, tira! Gol, 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 gol,
Spain, Alvaro, Barcelona, busy on the transfer front. Their first game after that flurry of January signings was a big one against the reigning Liga champions Atletico Madrid, their direct rivals for a top four spot. Alvaro, a huge win for Barcelona and a huge scoreline too.
Yes, it was a very entertaining game. Probably the first high-profile win of Barcelona this season because, you know, they haven't been able to beat Bayern, Benfica, Real Madrid in two occasions, Sevilla either. So this time Barcelona won a game that was labeled as a big game, important for Barcelona definitely, because if they lost, Atletico was going to run away in the fourth spot. And this Barcelona, I don't think that has the ability right now to chase. Basically, it's a team in construction, and we don't know if they can actually win game after game after game, back-to-back wins. I mean, this is difficult for Barcelona. So it was very important for them. And this was a game, number one, with a clash of ideologies. At the beginning of the game, they were asking Xavi about Simeone's style, vice versa. Well, we know that they are not particular fans of each other's styles, but anyway, this time Xavi's style is imposed itself. I would say that clearly. In a game that Barcelona showed new things, new players, a new vigor as well, and many ingredients that had been missing for a while. Resilience, because they played 20 minutes with a man down. Entertainment, because Adama Traoré is a very entertaining player, and he did entertain the Camp Nou, especially in the first half. Effectiveness, because they shot only 5 times on target, and they scored 4 goals, which is an oddity in this current Barcelona. And also there was a populous stand accompanying the party, which is something that hasn't happened lately with the pandemic and with the lack of passion about the team in Barcelona for the last months. But this time in the Camp Nou, there were 74,000 spectators, which is quite an attendance for this current Barcelona. So you put all this together, plus the fact that the 6 players that featured in the game were not Barcelona players at the beginning of the season. I'm talking about Alves, Gavi, Ferran, Adama, Nico, and Aubameyang. And you realize that there has been a little bit of a revolution here at Barcelona. You put all this together and you realize that this Barcelona is very different to the Barcelona that started the season in September. And this win was very important for the project.
When was the last time they scored 4 goals in a game, Barca?
Probably in the first game of the season against Real Sociedad.
Okay.
That's the first one I can recall.
Mm. Okay. Really. Adama Traore, you mentioned how entertaining he was. He got an assist. Probably the goal of the game was by a familiar face, Jordi Alba, the equaliser. Absolute stunner.
It was beautiful. The expected goals from that position is really low, especially because the ball is coming high. He volleyed. Maybe he hit a little bit with a shin. I don't want to be the downer here, the party pooper, but this may have happened. Mm-hmm. That said, the goal was beautiful. It looked like a three-pointer from Stephen Curry. I don't know how to explain it. Like the ball, like, flied onto the net, into the net. And yeah, it was totally unstoppable for Jan Oblak. So in a very important goal for Jordi Alba. He hasn't had a great January month. I would say that he was one of those players that was a little bit of hit and miss. But this time he definitely got it right. And it was a beautiful goal by Jordi Alba, yes.
Excellent. What about Aubameyang, meantime, whose move to Barcelona happened since our last show? What do you make of that? How do you see that going?
Well, I think that, you know, all the signings that Barcelona has done for free, signings or new players that they have brought in for free in winter, they've got pros and cons. And we know them very well. We know what Aubameyang is about. We know what he cannot offer. Same thing applies to Adama Traoré. Same thing applies to Dani Alves. But with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, there is something that can be tremendously beneficial for Barcelona. Barcelona lacked a lot of effectiveness in front of goal in the first half of the season. I think that the departure of of Griezmann and Lionel Messi left a really big hole in Barcelona. No one was scoring with ease apart from Ansu Fati, who is always in the sidelines. So Aubameyang is bringing that to the team. Maybe he's not the most hard-working player. We know that in the left flank, he is not dribbling past a lot, but we do know as well that as soon as he enters the box, he's a different player to anybody else at Barcelona, because he's got this effectiveness, a certain needs to score goals, and if he recovers the kind of form he showed at the end of the 1920 season, when he was the best player in the FA Cup in England, if he recovers a little bit of that, he's going to be very important for Barcelona, because Adama, Dani Alves and Aubameyang are certainly improving the squad. They are bringing their own profile to a squad that is lacking profiles. They are lacking a dribbler, a guy with speed like Adama. They are lacking a right back with the know-how like Dani Alves. And they were lacking a goal scorer. Well, Aubameyang is here.
Excellent. Oh, on the subject of Dani Alves, he was on the score sheet, got a goal, an assist and a red card. Here's a stat. This is from Tim Lee. Gavi, who also scored. When Gavi was born, Alves had already played 46 matches for Sevilla. Jeepers.
And Xavi Simons had been taking penalties.
For the under-19s. Yeah.
it's a good time for Dani Alves anyway. He did start for Brazil against Paraguay the other day in a win of Brazil by 4-0 against Paraguay. And Tite and Xavi have found a position for him. It's not that this is something new, I mean, something tactically astute or anything like that, but or that we have never seen. But Dani Alves doesn't overlap anymore when Barcelona has the ball. Dani Alves stays with the midfielders or with the defenders. And, you know, if he doesn't have these offensive responsibilities, then I think that Dani Alves can prolong a little bit longer his career, and he could be important for Barcelona in this season. He's not going to be registered for the Europa League, by the way, but I think that in La Liga he's going to offer something different to Sergiño Dest. Sergiño Dest is about energy, and Dani Alves right now is about using his head and playing football very well.
The good crazy.
Yeah, you can say that.
As for Atletico Madrid, currently lying there as crippled as poor Daniel Vaz. They've lost 5 of their last 8 league games. The champions currently lying outside the top 4. What's going on, Alvaro?
Nothing is going right now for Atletico de Madrid. I mean, 11 teams are better defensively than Atletico in La Liga. This is unprecedented under Simeone. Simeone created the best defensive unit in Europe for 3 or 4 years, and Atletico is no longer that. I mean, 11 teams in La Liga have conceded less goals than Atletico de Madrid. Atletico has done an emergency signing, Reinildo, he played a little bit against Barcelona. I don't know how much he's going to bring in this squad. He will play in the left back as soon as he gets match fit for Simeone. Apart from the defense, also in attack, Simeone doesn't know how to get the best of his attacking talent. Every attacking player he's got has a different profile, different skills, and Simeone seems like not to profit these profiles into the right games. He's just playing these guys up front, and it's like they don't have a plan. Yesterday, Atletico played for 25 minutes with one more player than Barcelona, and they didn't know how to attack. They didn't know how to break a very tight defense, and then also. I think that Simeone is always giving their strikers a little bit of freedom, but not too much. Their freedom is very ephemeral in the games because number one, they have to work hard. Number two, they will have their freedom every now and then in the game. And I think that this goes in the mind of the players too. Yannick Carrasco, for example, yesterday, he looked like the best player of Atletico de Madrid. But as soon as Adama Traoré was giving a torrid afternoon to Hermoso, Yannick Carrasco had to defend with Hermoso. Instead of using Yannick, you know, to attack, he was deployed to defense. Same thing happens to Lemar. He knows that if he doesn't play very well, after 55, 57 minutes, he's going to be replaced. So I think that this goes in the mind of the players too. And then, you know, they are missing Marcos Llorente. This is unquestionable. He was the best player of Atletico de Madrid last season. Not in attack, neither in defense, they are capable of controlling the game. And then when it comes to the midfielder area, the midfield area, Koke basically is the only man who is always playing there, but whoever plays alongside him doesn't seem to add a lot. Rodrigo De Paul, this season, he started very well, but he hasn't become the referential midfielder that Atletico wanted. So there are many things not functioning, and very soon they will be playing against Manchester United in the Champions League, another dysfunctional team. So this is going to be quite fun to watch, probably, because both teams are really strugglers right now.
Okay. Well, looking forward to that. Very good. Barcelona then into fourth place, 2 points clear of Atletico Madrid. Real Madrid had a 1-0 win over Granada. They are now 6 points clear at the top because Sevilla only managed a 0-0 draw at Osasuna with Anthony Martial making his debut there for the Andalusians. All right. Next up, let's get a quick check on Mario Balotelli and then the Bundesliga.
We all enjoy the sport we call the beautiful game.
But since I've retired, I've discovered an ugly, even darker side to the sport we love.
Join me as Jamie Redknapp investigates.
Thanks, Jamie. We'll take it from here. Join Jamie Redknapp for Jamie Investigates, the football mockumentary series. Watch on Paddy Power's Twitter. This week, Jamie investigates people who still call the Premier League the Premiership.
Do you know the truth?
Paddy Power.
18+, begambleaware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
That's right, I said Mario Balotelli. A brace for Super Mario this weekend as Vincenzo Montella's Adana Demirspor climbed all the way up to third in the Super League. Yes, third. They're 17 points off the top, you know, to be fair, where Trabzonspor hold a mighty 9-point lead over Konyaspor, but they're still third place and heading for European football. Remarkable. Mario Balotelli himself has now got 10 goals in 20 league matches, which, yeah, is all right. James, how did he had a little spell with the Azzurri, of course, and their recent stage. How did that go?
It went okay, but Mancini was up front and said...
They didn't fight, did they, this time?
No, but I mean, he was very clear on what the hierarchy is when it comes to the strikers that will be playing for Italy in the March playoff against North Macedonia and Palermo, and then if they prevail, the winner of Portugal and Turkey. And that's maybe, you know, where Mario is playing like the secret agent role. You know, he's Mancini's man in Turkey, sussing it all out in the event that they then play against the Turks.
The Turks. Who? What's the hierarchy then?
Right, it's your friend Ciro Immobile.
Woof.
And then there's the sliding scale, isn't there, of Gianluca Scamacca, the Sassuolo forward, João Pedro, who is another player who was called up for the first time to be part of the stage, and well, I mean, there are lots of Italians, even, you know, sort of. Manolo Gabbiadini, who unfortunately suffered an injury, long-term injury for Samp. So Sebastian Giovinco is now back in Serie A.
Here's your answer. It's going to take you to the World Cup.
So, I mean, the hope is...
He could still be taking penalties for the under-19s, Giovinco.
He's taken them all his life. In the under-35s.
But I read that today about him... him coming in for Gabbiadini at Samp. But where's he been? What's he been doing?
Well, I mean, you've got to take your hat off to Giovinco. I mean, he's set for life, isn't he? Because just as Robin Gosens has said, he turned Newcastle down, right, even though he knew it could help him provide for not just the next generation, but the generation after that of Gosens. Giovinco has probably provided for, I don't know, the next four, five generations of Giovinco's in going to Toronto, where Insigne has gone. So Toronto have signed Insigne because of the success of the Atomic Ant. Remember, that was his nickname in MLS. And then after, he went to Saudi Arabia.
Right.
And I think he was there until Samp basically said, "Hey, Sebastian, we saw you doing all this press whilst Insigne got his move to Toronto, when you said MLS, it's not all that. It's a different sport. And we thought we'd bring you back." So yes, the Atomic Ant is back in Liguria.
And taking care of future generations. I got to believe that, I mean, his needs can't be very great. He lives in a little box, a little shoe box somewhere. Probably. Excellent. Okay, well, that's a fascinating little vignette. Let's now check in on the Bundesliga with our pal Christoph Biermann.
Hi, James.
Hello. How are you? Lovely to have you back on the Totally Football Show. I see your Bayern Munich are 9 points clear again after their win over Leipzig and Dortmund collapsing at home to Leverkusen. What a crazy-looking game that one was, the Dortmund-Leverkusen match.
Yeah, they probably would have also needed an atomic ant or something like that, or several more. But, I mean, for Borussia Dortmund, it was a bit like the Groundhog Day. But the difference with the Borussia Dortmund Groundhog Day is you don't know when they are coming. Because three weeks back, they had probably one of their best performances of the season when they were defeating Freiburg 5-1. And yesterday, they totally collapsed against Bayer Leverkusen, and you didn't really see that coming. They had been winning at Hoffenheim before, dropped out of the German Cup at second division St. Pauli. So Borussia Dortmund is a bit of the problem child of the Bundesliga right now.
Mm. Yeah, and indeed for a long time. But
they have signed Niklas Süle, the central defender, on a free transfer. They just confirmed it today. And that's an interesting move. Süle is 26 now. He played five seasons for Bayern Munich. They wanted to extend his contract, but obviously they didn't want to pay him as much as he wanted. And so now he will be playing for Borussia Dortmund in the next four seasons, or at least he signed a four-year contract. And that's very interesting, because it probably says that he will be one of the top earners for Borussia Dortmund in the future.
You mentioned their form of late. They won 9 of their previous 10 matches at home in the Bundesliga. Dortmund, they were without Erling Haaland for this game, but in as much as they have ongoing problems that resurface from time to time, was this also about an extraordinarily good Bayer Leverkusen? This was their biggest ever win away at Dortmund.
Yeah, it was a fantastic performance by Leverkusen. I mean, they are on a good day, and they had some good days during this season. It's really fun to watch them, because they are so light-footed, they are so quick, they have excellent players with Florian Wirtz, who on a good day looks like the future of German football. Patrick Schick, who didn't score yesterday, who is their top scorer. Diaby, who is one of the fastest players in the Bundesliga. But on the other side, Borussia Dortmund, they were defeated more or less by their counterattacks. And you know how they play. And I think a team of the quality of Borussia Dortmund should be prepared. And And I think, I mean, what the players and Marco Rose, the coach, said, they were prepared. I mean, they were not surprised by the way how Bayer Leverkusen played, but they, they didn't follow the instructions. And sometimes, I don't like to talk about it, but sometimes it looks as if they are lacking mentality. The mentality to concentrate, to mentality to follow instructions and so on, and that's part of the ongoing what I call groundhog thing discussion about their instability.
Mm. And the situation in the Bundesliga is that even with this defeat, things stay more or less the same. They're in second place, where they were probably always going to be, or at least was always going to be, the sum of their ambitions in terms of league standing. They're 9 points behind Borussia, 5 points clear of Leverkusen, and just kind of humming along in much the same kind of much the same level, even with this defeat. Bayern, though, taking on Leipzig, Julian Nagelsmann's a former club, and winning 3-2. How was this match?
It was a terrific match. It was fun to watch. It was open. Leipzig managed to shoot more often on the Bayern goal than any other team this season, and maybe Bayern was even a bit lucky in winning it. But altogether, it was very good, and it showed that the failed experiment with Jesse March is now in a good way corrected with Domenico Tedesco as a new head coach, and Leipzig looks like being back on track, and they look like the team that should end up in the one of the top four spots, so that they qualify again for the Champions League next year.
Mm, they're still a way off. Well, I suppose they're only 3 points behind Union Berlin, also in the mix there. Freiburg and Köln, who I always enjoy referencing. And last time you were with us, you were telling us about the cult figure that is Stefan Baumgart, the Köln manager, who wasn't able to be at their win over Freiburg on Saturday, but he still made front page news.
Yeah, because his daughter filmed him while her father was watching the match, and he put a video on TikTok, and it's actually very funny, even if you don't understand a word of German. You see a nutter jumping around in his living room with the dog on his shoulder. So the dog is stepping on his shoulders when he's standing in front of the telly. So that is it's a recommendation, even if you, again, if you don't understand a word of German. I think it's not properly German. It's more like rah, 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 like this kind of stuff.
Right. I have to say that sounds like German to me. So, but yeah, you mentioned the strong brand that Stefan Baumgart's got. I must admit, watching it, I noticed he still had his trademark hat on, and I wondered if he was entirely unaware that his performance was being filmed.
Probably not. I mean, that would be a surprise if for whatever an hour or so somebody is filming you, or a smartphone is installed. So I think it's maybe not a big PR story, but maybe a tiny PR story for him.
Excellent. All right. Well, so he's in the hunt for a top four. Anything else we should know about the Bundesliga weekend, Christoph?
Coming back to Bayern, so Manuel Neuer will be out for at least four weeks, maybe 6 weeks, because he's undergoing an operation, or already did today, on his knee. And I think it tells a bit about the Bundesliga, or at least the situation at the top of the Bundesliga, because he was obviously not injured. It was more like, the situation is okay right now. I can do the operation to solve a little problem with my knee and will be back for the Champions League. I wait until the match against Leipzig is played, and but then I can take a break. So it's a bit tells a bit about the attitude Bayern can have toward the Bundesliga right now.
Mm. And even their Champions League opponents, RB Salzburg, not the toughest of draws, many people would regard that as. Okay, well, fabulous stuff, Christoph. Thank you so much for bringing us all of that. We look forward to catching up with you soon.
Okay, thank you. Cheers, bye.
The great Christoph Biermann there with news from the Bundesliga. Next up, let's hear Jules on Ligue 1.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which will come in handy when Mikel Arteta finally bends the process altogether. Pre-match bet builders only get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Maximum free bet is £10. Other T's and C's apply, and please gamble responsibly.
Kylian Mbappé, sur le côté gauche, l'intérieur, pied droit! La spéciale! Kylian!
Jules, woof. Sunday evening, big clash of the champions in Ligue 1. And a big win for Mauricio Pochettino as Paris Saint-Germain went to Lille and did them 5-1.
Yeah, 5-1, big win. He needed that, especially after the Nice defeat in the Cup. No long ago, they lost 5-1 in Lille. Kylian Mbappé mentioned it at the end in his post-match interview. It was a really good game, to be fair. I mean, Lille made mistakes defensively and gifted a couple of goals to Paris, the one to Messi, who finished it well, but that was a big mistake by Botman. But overall, I thought PSG, with Messi as a false number nine, played really well. Maybe their best game, certainly of the season, and maybe even since Poch arrived at the club. They were really well organised, structured. I thought their counter-press worked really well. They conceded a goal, and Ben Arfa really did Di Maria bad on the left-hand side. And when Thierry Henry asked the question to Kylian Mbappé after the game, Mbappé about Ben Arfa said, well, you don't buy talent at Tesco, which is fair. Otherwise, we would all queue at Tesco to get the talent. And at that point, it's 1-1. And we think, okay, let's see how PSG react. But he reacted really well. Mm. And it's a big win, especially 7 days now before the Real Madrid clash in the Champions League.
Is that all it is until the Real Madrid game?
Yeah. Maybe Benzema is not available, by the way. Let's see.
Jules, what did Carrefour say about Thierry Henry? I mean, is Tesco a thing in France? I mean,
So Kylian mentioned Carrefour, but I thought listeners would not know what Carrefour is. So
Our listeners know what Carrefour is.
Okay, so he said, yeah, you don't buy the quality at Carrefour.
What does
which
that
I
mean?
Thought Tesco, you don't buy at the supermarket. That's what he
means.
Yeah,
but what does he mean, you don't buy the quality at the supermarket?
Not everybody
has. Classic non aqua.
Okay, is he saying you can't buy Ben Arfa at the supermarket?
No, I think he means the talent that Ben Arfa has is not given to anyone. You can't buy it at the supermarket. You're born with it like him.
It's the culture market.
Yeah. I understand, but you can buy it at the market. They just have one. Anyway, that's how Lille got. I don't know. I don't get it.
So but the positioning of Messi would be interesting because that was his best game, easily. Remember, a few weeks ago already on this show, I said, stop playing him wide on the right-hand side where he doesn't have any more the qualities to do well there. He's not as quick on the first 5 yards as he used to. also if you play him on the right, you block Achraf Hakimi to like just bomb up and down the flank because Messi would stand up there. So it would be difficult. And it worked much better with Messi as a false nine centrally, for Hakimi on the right hand side, for Di Maria, who then got a knock. So Draxler came on. And that worked well. And I don't think even Mbappe minds playing on the left if Messi's as a false nine. He comes inside enough, like he did on his goal, which is a bit of his trademark now. So I'm really curious to see what Poch is going to do now, and especially against Real Madrid, if the idea is to have Messi in that position.
He's been a bit unlucky anyway, James, because he hit the footwork 7 times in the Ligue 1. That's a lot. And he did it on Sunday again.
Yeah. No, fair enough. Second goal now, 6 assists for plucky Leo Messi, and a massive win for Paris Saint-Germain. 13 points clear now, Jules. Yikes. 13 points clear of Marseille, who've gone second. They had a 5-2 win over Angers, while Nice, who had been second, got beaten at home by Clermont Foot. Woof. All right, other news, Jules? What do you want to talk about? Struggling Bordeaux? How about Lyon's unbeaten run coming to an end, as we say, at the hands of Monaco?
Yeah, Monaco played really well. Philippe Clément, who's starting to change a few things there, especially the first half. And for Lyon, who just beat Marseille on Tuesday in that replay fixture when the game was abandoned. Remember, after four minutes when Payet was hit by a bottle at the Groupama Stadium, Lyon won that game 2-1, coming back from 1-0 down with Peter Bosz changing everything at halftime, which worked, and Xherdan Shaqiri being amazing, one goal, one assist. Well, since that game, Lyon lost at Monaco, going back to their old self, where it's a shambles and Peter Bosz is a shambles. And Shaqiri has decided he's had enough, so he's off to MLS and Chicago Fire, where actually Lyon would get more money for him now than they actually paid Liverpool for Shaqiri 7 months ago now, which is quite unexpected and really a late Christmas gift for them, because they were very happy to let Shaqiri go, because apart from that game against Marseille, he'd been dreadful all season. So they really welcomed the offer from Chicago and got rid of him. But as we saw in the Monaco game, Shaqiri was not the problem, really. The problem is much deeper, with Peter Bosz, with the tactics, with the players underperforming, and also a few injuries. Ryan Cherki is now out for 3 months. Usamawa is out as well. So Guimaraes has gone, as we know.
Is that their Champions League money, Jules, covered? You've sold Guimaraes, so if we don't get Champions League, it's okay. Newcastle have paid us 50 million.
Yeah, I think financially it's difficult for them. And they're obviously on the stock exchange, so on the stock market, so they need...
Have you traded all your stocks in Lyon? Is that
it's gone. It's gone a long time ago. Alas, I'm telling you now, I've sold out. And they need it. And they still need the Champions League. Peter Bosz, we will know by the end of the month. This is the deadline, the end of February, to know if they keep him or sack him. And very good in one half against Marseille on Tuesday, last Tuesday. And then dreadful against Monaco in the two halves. So it's really hot and cold at times with him. I can't see him staying, I have to say.
Lyon are currently 8 points off the top three and a Champions League berth for next season. Monaco, who actually won this game 2-0. And by the way, what a fabulous goal from Wissam Ben Yedder as well, as per usual. They are ahead, 2 points ahead of Lyon. Trying to do my maths here. They are 6 points behind third place Nice.
And just on Marseille, Arkadiusz Milik with a hat-trick. Him who's been struggling all season and carrying this team. They were 2-0 down at home, Marseille, at the Velodrome against Angers after 15 minutes. Coming back to score 5 goals, obviously, to win 5-2 was pretty impressive. And Milik was at the heart of it all, so it was really good for his confidence.
Excellent. Excellent. Very good. Listener, if you're wondering, meanwhile, Ligue 1, but what's going on across the border in Belgium? We've got a treat for you next as we hit the Jupiler League.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Van Zerida, quand même, malgré son jeune âge, une intelligence dans ça. Une intelligence magnifique. Et là, honnêtement, Undaf qui vient inscrire un but. C'est assez logique.
Belgium. You're right, listener. It's been a while since we checked in on the Jupiler League, where runaway leaders are Union Saint-Gilloise, which is a remarkable story because they only got promoted to the top flight in Belgium this season, after half a century almost down in the lower tiers. And they are now 11 points clear of Antwerp, 12 of Club Bruges and heading to a Champions League near you. How? Who? Let's find out from Christophe Tereur, who joins us now. Hello, Christophe.
Hello, James.
Thank you so much for joining us. And what a remarkable story this is. Another win this weekend, this time against one of the traditional top sides in Belgium, Antwerp, beating them 2-0 away.
Yes, pretty remarkable what they keep on doing. They got 10 out of 12 points against the teams you expect to qualify for the playoffs. They're direct competitors in a few weeks when in Belgium the playoffs start. As we all know, we have that pretty annoying system where you first have a normal league and then the points are split into two and you start over again. But Union will have a big advantage on the rest if they keep on performing like they're doing now. It's an amazing story, but it's amazing football that they're bringing too. So,
I absolutely did know that about the playoffs, Christophe. They're unbeaten in 11 matches, so you'd fancy their form going into those decisive matches. But what's behind this incredible rise that they've had out of the second division and then straight to the top and past everybody else?
Well, a few years ago, they were taken over by Tony Bloom, who's also the Brighter owner. He invested some money into the club, and then they got working strict on a databases, like all clubs do nowadays, scouting on a databases. But they have a good manager too. They got Felice Mazzu in Italy. Yeah. And the son of Italian immigrants who worked at Charleroi before, had a brief spell at Racing Genk, and is the ideal manager for an underdog team. And he plays a similar system like Antonio Conte does, like the 3-5-2 with the wingbacks on the line, basically. And from there, everything starts. So they have a pretty easy system. They got good recruitment over the last few years. So that's why they are suddenly there. And they got a striking pairing up front that's scoring goals and making assists for each other. And if you have two players who can score a lot of goals and you have a defense that doesn't concede a lot, then you get far in football. So it's that easy, I think.
Both goals this weekend coming from the German striker. How should it be pronounced? Dennis Undav?
Yes, that's right. That's perfect pronunciation.
Thank you so much. He's up to 20. He's up to 20 for this season. And he's going to be, or he should be turning out at the Amex this time next season, or at least next campaign, because he signed for Brighton on deadline day. Of course, as you mentioned, also owned by the same man who co-owns Union Saint-Gilloise.
Yeah, Undav is one of the revelations. Nobody had heard of him before. He was somewhere in the, I think it was the third German league somewhere. They scouted him. They saw something into his data. And then, he seems to be a top character too. But because that's something that's playing in the background too. It's a group without any stars. All unknown players or players who were not good enough for certain teams. It's a bit like comparable with what Leicester did when they won their title, like lots of underdogs, and a few of them will make it into top teams like Undav. There's also Dante Van Zijl, the other striker, who made it already into the Belgian squad. So yes, that's it's a remarkable story, but we will see it next season when they get into Europe, into European football, because they will win an European ticket. It's that easy for them now. They can't lose it anymore, I think. So when they play every single, every 3 days, and when the manager doesn't have to rotate anymore, because they almost play every single week with the same team, and that's something you can't compare to the other teams in Belgium who've been playing in Europe a lot too, so they have that advantage too.
All right, well, echoes thereof, as you mentioned, Leicester. As and when they do get into Europe, they'll be presumably having to use a different stadium because their current ground is an extraordinary. I'd not seen much of it before, but it's magnificent. But what does it hold? About 8,000, and most of it is kind of grass and ferns.
Yeah, it's still from the early 1900s, so it's still the same old stadium. They've built a few new stands, but they will have to move to OHL or the King Boudouin Stadium where the Belgian national team is playing. But the stadium is what makes this team remarkable. It's the club has something old-fashioned, and as you're in love with Italy, there's a link with Italy too, with Union. Did you know that? The link between Italy and Union.
I didn't know, Christophe. Tell us.
No, you're a fan of Italian music too, I think. So, do you know the disco song "Vamos alla Playa"?
Oh yeah, "Vamos alla Playa".
La Playa.
By James, who's it by? It's they also had another song, "No Tengo Dinero." What was it called? Oh, what were their names?
It's Riggiera, I think.
There you go. Riggiera. Thanks, Christopher.
He's their most famous fan. He's often at Union. They even have a banner for him. He fell in love with Union in the 90s when he was there for a gig. And the fans started singing "Vamos a la Playa" because some recognized him, of course.
Right.
And he became a fan of Union because they are basically founded on the same day as his favorite club in Italy, Juventus. It's the 1st of November. Yeah, maybe I'm wrong, but it's 1897, maybe something like that. So it's the same date. They're founded on the same day as Juventus, basically. And that's why he's a fan, and because the fans, started chanting his song. So there are a lot of Italians coming over, by the way, for a weekend to watch Union, because it's pretty old-fashioned. It's beer, singing, and having fun in an old-fashioned stadium. It's the football that some older man fell in love with years ago. But yeah, in a few years, Union, of course, will be building a new stadium, and then all this old-fashioned thing is gone, and then it might be not the same anymore.
Oh crikey, Christophe!
Do they call the ground La Playa? That would be really amazing.
No, not yet. Maybe we should introduce that. We can still do that. They call it La Playa, the new one. So,
well, if they do play away at Brighton, you know, in a kind of Tony Bloom derby, then that, you know, that could be Vamos La Playa.
That could be the Playa derby.
Or whatever arena.
Right,
arena
sand.
Means sand. In Spanish,
nice,
yeah.
Nicely done. Yeah. So, but one last thing, then, Christophe, on this. So you have this very traditional club that's been taken over partly by English money. There's some English players, an Irish sporting director have come in, a kind of modern scouting model for how to run the club. How are people feeling about this in Belgium and their success?
Yeah, everybody has. It's a bit of a fairy tale story, comparable to Leicester. Everyone is basically cheering for Union because it's something different that's happening in the league. It's not Club Brugge, it's not Antwerp, it's not Anderlecht. It's something new, and it's an underdog, and everybody basically loves underdog stories. So there's no talks about Bloom and how he made his money and stuff like that. It doesn't have the dirty side of football, which is talked a lot about in Belgium nowadays, with Operation Propaganda, where a lot of directors of our top clubs have been involved. So Union is the only feel-good story nowadays in Belgian football.
Magnificent. All right, Chris. Well, we'll keep an eye on how things go as they head towards those playoffs. And hopefully you'll be joining us to bring us further update on a happy end to their fairy tale season.
Hopefully.
All right, Christophe Terreur with the extraordinary story of Union Saint-Gilloise. Angels.
I love that story. It's a really good atmosphere. A few of my friends, you know, my brother and my sister live in Brussels.
Oh, yeah.
And they go, a few of their friends go as well. It's a great story, fantastic club to follow. I don't know how sustainable it is, of course, and how much they can stay at the top and etc. Champions League, everything you want. The playoffs already would be a good idea to see how far they can go with the pressure and everything, because you can finish top of the table now, but still not being champions. I think the playoffs brings a different kind of expectations and pressure, but they're doing great. And I think well done to Tony Bloom and the work that they've done there, mostly with data, like Christophe said, but also with the right manager and some players who clearly believe in the story, in the project, the story and what this club is about.
So you're now a USG fan rather than a PSG fan.
I'm being told every week, come and jump on the Eurostar, come and go to a game with us, which I haven't done. We had, James, were you there on BBC Five Live? We had the other striker, Dante Van Zier, who came and said, like, even the players didn't really believe in the whole season and how well that was going. That was a few weeks ago already. So now it's even more incredible that they've not just performed that well, but consistently and stayed at the top pretty much since day one. So it's really, really remarkable.
All right. Did you know, Alvaro, that their aforementioned stadium, 102 years old, do you know what it was the venue for? The first ever event of something. Do you know what?
Well, probably the Olympics.
No. Spain's first ever match, although maybe that was at the Olympics.
Okay.
But maybe that was.
Spain's first ever match. They thought, hey, rather than get together in Madrid or Barcelona, but you make it sound like it was like jumpers for goalposts, where they just went, shall we just sit down here? Where are we? Brussels,
a lovely pitch.
Suburbs.
Looks a lovely
Brilliant.
Pitch.
When was that? Great. When was that exactly?
1902.
Was it?
No, I'm kidding. I don't know. I've got no idea.
Okay. Vamos a Bruxelles.
I read that somewhere. Listen, if it's not true... what the hell? It feels true. Well, that's a lovely, heartwarming note to finish today's Totally Football show on. Alvaro's still checking that first Spain international. Of course, we'll be back next Tuesday with all the latest continental doings. So do join us for that and have a great week in the meantime. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.